Book 17. How They Fought Over the Body of Patroclus. Menelaus had not failed to mark the death of Patroclus. He came up at once and bestrode the body like a cow standing over her calf, the first she ever bore, with plaintive lowing. He held spear leveled and shield before him, ready to kill anyone who should attack. Euphorbus also was not indifferent to the hero's fall. He presented himself before Menelaus and said, "Go back, my lord King Menelaus, go back. Leave the body, leave the spoils. I was first to strike him, not a man of Trojans or allies come before me. Then leave me my triumph, or I will kill you, and life is sweet." Menelaus cried out in hot anger, "Father Zeus, how ugly is a vainglorious boast! There's not as much pride in a panther or a lion or a wild boar, and a boar's the most blustering swaggerer on earth, as there is in these sons of Panthous with their ashwood poles. Hipparinor was a strong man, but he had small joy of his strength when he made light of me and stood up to me and thought I was one to be despised. I don't think he walked home on his own feet to make his wife and parents happy. I fancy I'll quench your pride, too, if you stand up to me. I advise you to go away and hide yourself. You had better not come near me, or you'll be sorry for it. When a thing is done and past, even fools are wise at last." Euphorbus did not care. What he said was, "Now indeed, my lord Menelaus, you shall pay in full for my brother whom you killed. And here you are boasting how you made his wife a widow in her new bridal chamber, and brought mourning and lamentation upon his parents. I might console those unhappy creatures if I could bring your head and your armor and lay them in the hands of Panthous and Lady Frontis. But it shall not be long before we put our quarrel to the test of life or death." With that, he struck a blow on the shield. The point bent and did not go through. But Menelaus, with a prayer to Father Zeus, lunged, and as the man stepped back, struck him on the root of the throat, putting his weight into the blow. The blade cut through, and he fell with a dull thud in his rattling armor. That hair lovely as the Graces, those tresses tight pinched with gold and silver wire, were drenched with blood. He lay like a tall stem of olive which a man keeps in a private garden, where plenty of water flows, growing fair and high. It sways in the breath of all the breezes, heavy with the white flowers, until suddenly a storm wind roots it out of the trench and lays it along the ground. And so he lay, when Menelaus had killed him and stripped his armor. When a mountain-bred lion, proud in his strength, ravishes the best cow from a grazing herd, he takes the neck in his strong teeth and breaks it, then gulps down blood and bowels, tearing savagely. Dogs and herdsmen hoot loudly from a distance and dare not come near, for they are all afraid. Just so none of those men dared to come near Menelaus. Then he would have carried off the spoils without trouble, but Phoebus Apollo grudged it to him. So the god took the shape of Mentes the Ciconian and spoke to Hector in plain words. "Hector, you are chasing what you will never catch when you run like this after the horses of Achilles. It is not easy for a mortal man to master them and drive them. That is only for Achilles, whose mother is herself an immortal. Meanwhile, King Menelaus has been defending Patroclus, and he has killed your best man, Euphorbus Panthoides." Then he went back into the melee. Hector looked round angrily and saw them at once, the body lying on the ground with blood flowing from the wound, and Menelaus stripping off the armor. He shouted and hastened toward them like a flame of fire. Menelaus heard the shout and said to himself, "What shall I do? If I leave the spoils, and if I leave Patroclus, who lies here for my sake, not a Danaan but will hate the sight of me. If I stand and fight Hector and the Trojan army alone to save my honor, I shall be surrounded, for here comes Hector with all his army." "No, no, all that is nonsense. When one fights a fellow that finds favor in the sight of God, he simply tempts providence and brings tribulation rolling upon himself. Then no Danaan will hate the sight of me if he sees me retreat before Hector, because Hector has heaven to help him. But if I could hear anything of that redoubtable man Aias, we might even tempt Providence a bit and strike a blow to save this dead man for Achilles Pelides. That would be the best choice of evils. While he was deliberating, Hector and his Trojans had come near. Menelaus left the body and retreated, turning again and again, like a bearded lion chased from the farmyard by dogs and men with shouting and spears. His stout heart freezes within him, and sorely against his will he leaves that farm. So, in a slow, reluctant pace, Menelaus went on until he found his people. Then he faced about and looked everywhere for Telamonian Aias. He soon saw him on the left of the battle, rallying the men, who were in mortal fear of Phoebus Apollo. He went off at a run and soon reached him and said, "Aias, this way, don't waste time. Hurry up for Patroclus. He's dead, but we may bring back the body to Achilles. The armor is lost. Hector has it." This did arouse Aias. He and Menelaus together made their way through the press. Hector had taken the armor, and now he was dragging away the body, intending to cut off the head and throw the body among the carrion dogs. But now comes Aias behind that great shield like a stone wall. Hector retreated and leaped into his car. He gave the armor to be carried back to the city and to be his chief pride. Aias now covered the body with his broad shield. He stood as a lion stands over his young, when huntsmen meet him leading his cubs through the woods. With a defiant swagger, he draws down the eyelids to hide his eyes. So stood Aias, with his legs across the body of Patroclus. By his side was Menelaus, ever more and more anxious. Now Glaucus, with a frown, reproached Hector for his delay. "You are handsome enough, Hector, but there is a good deal lacking in you as a soldier. You have a great name for nothing. You are a regular shake-leg. You had better consider now how you and your people alone are going to save Ilios. None of the Lycians, at least, will fight for you, since we get no thanks, it seems, for these everlasting battles. How are you likely to save an ordinary man when you deserted Sarpedon in this heartless way? And he was your friend and comrade, and you left him to be the Argives' prey and plaything. He did good work for you in your city while he lived, and now you have not the pluck to save him from the dogs. If any Lycians will listen to me, it's homeward we will go, and that means certain destruction for Troy. For if the Trojans had now real bold, undaunted courage, such as men feel when they fight for home and country, we should soon drag Patroclus into Ilios. If we could drag him away and get him into the city dead, the Argives would very soon release the armor of Sarpedon, and we should bring him too into Ilios. For the master of Patroclus is one who is chief champion of the Argives, he and his men. But you would not stand up to Aias and look in your enemy's eyes or fight it out with him, for he is a better man than you." Hector looked angrily at him and said, "How could a man like you, Glaucus, say such an outrageous thing? Damn it all, I thought you were the most sensible man in Lycia." "I don't think much of your sense now when you say such a thing. I would not stand up to that monster, Aias, so you say. Battles and trampling horses don't make me shiver, but the will of Zeus Almighty must always prevail, and he can make the strongest man take to his heels and robs him of victory easily, or again he sends him forward to the fight. Pray come this way, sluggard, stand by my side and see my work. See whether I shall be a coward all the day long, as you declare, or if I shall stop the fighting of a Danaan or two, however fierce they may be over dead Patroclus." With this, he called to the Trojans at the top of his voice. "Trojans, Lycians, my brave Dardanians, be men, my friends. Don't forget your duty. Fight your hardest until I put on the armor of Achilles, which I have torn off the back of Patroclus after I killed him." He hurried away out of the battle, and ran as fast as he could to the men who were carrying the armor. They were not far away, and he ran like the wind. There behind the battle, he stood and changed. He gave his own gear to the carriers and put on the incorruptible armor of Achilles Pelides, which the heavenly ones had given to his father, and his father had given to him in old age. but the son never grew old in his father's armor. When Zeus' cloud gatherer saw him behind the battle, arming himself in the gear of Pelides, he shook his head and said to himself, "Poor creature, you have no thought of death in your mind, and death is very near. You don the incorruptible armor of a mighty champion whom others do tremble at. His comrade you have slain, that man so gentle and so strong, and torn his armor brutally from head and shoulders. Yet I will put great strength into your hands to set off against this, that you shall never return out of this battle, or give to Andromache the famous armor of Pelion." Over these words he bowed with his black brows. But he made the armor fit the body of Hector, and the dreadful spirit of war entered into him and filled every limb with power and strength. He came back to his allies, shouting. There they all saw him shining in the armor of the great Achilles. Then he appealed to each in turn. Mesles and Glaucus, Medon and Thersilochus, Asteropius and Dicenor, Hippothous, Phorcys and Chromius, and Enemus, the bird diviner, and said plainly without wasting words, "Hear me now, you thousand tribes of my allies from the country round about. I did not want numbers, and I was not looking for numbers when I sent round to your cities to invite you here. What I wished was that you of your own generous hearts might save the women and children of Troy from the Achaean invaders. That is my thought when I exhaust my people with supplies and food for you and try to content you all. Then let each man turn straight to the front, come death, come life. That's how war and battle kiss and prattle. The man who succeeds in driving back Aeus and gets Patroclus into Troy, dead as he is, half of the spoils I will allot him and keep half myself. He shall have as much pride as I have." Straight for the Danaans in a heavy mass they marched, with spears at the ready. They expected soon to drag away the corpse from Aeus Telamonides. Fools! He killed many of them over that corpse. At last Aeus was convinced and said to his companion, "We are wasting time, my dear prince. I cannot believe any longer that we shall get safely out of this by our two selves. I am not so much worried about this dead corpse of Patroclus, which will soon be a good supper for dogs and vultures, as I am worried about my own live head, which may come to grief, and for yours too, when I see battle all around us like a cloud. Hector himself and certain death once more manifest for us. Look sharp, call some of our good men if you can make one here." Menelaus shouted for help loud and clear. "Friends! Captains and princes, you guests of our royal house who drink free at the board of Agamemnon and Menelaus, captains in high command, but Zeus gives rank and honor still to every creature at his will. I really can't make out where they all are. There is such a blaze of battle hereabouts. But do come if I don't mention your names. Come, everybody. You ought to be ashamed to let Patroclus be just a toy for dogs to play about with." Aeus the runner heard him clearly enough, and came running up first, then Idomeneus and his formidable retainer Meriones. But who could ever remember the names of all who came after these to reinforce the fighting? Then the Trojans rushed on in a mass, roaring and shouting like a great wave roaring against the swollen stream at a river's mouth, when the foam flies high and the headlands boom. The Achaeans stood firm and determined round the body, fenced by their metal-plated shields. Cronion also covered their shining helmets in a thick cloud. He had no feeling against Menoetiades when he was alive, and when dead he hated to let him be mauled about by Trojan dogs, and so he helped the defenders. At first the Trojans pushed the Achaeans back, and they left the body. The Trojans hurt none of them in the retreat, as they would have liked to do, but they began to drag the body away. But the Achaeans were not likely to be long in rallying when Aeus was there. Aeus, the finest man and the strongest man in the army after Achilles. He soon swung them round again and charged like a wild boar twisting about in the woods, which easily scatters huntsmen and dogs and all. So Aeus scattered the Trojans who were crowding about Patroclus, determined to drag him away and cover themselves with glory. Now Hippothous, the son of Pelasgian Lethos, had tied up the ankles of Patroclus with his sword belt, hoping to gain credit with Hector. He was dragging the body away when a blow fell on him, irresistible. Aeus was upon him and drove the great spear crashing through his helmet, and the brains ran out along the socket. The man dropped the foot of Patroclus and let it lie as he fell prone over the corpse, far from fertile Laris. Few and short had his days been when Aeus laid him low, and he never paid to his parents the debt of a grateful son. Then Hector cast a glance at Aeus, but Aeus was watching his eye and dodged a little aside. The blade hit Schedius and ran under his collarbone and stuck out of the shoulder, bringing him down with a bang and a clang in his armor. Schedius was the son of Iphitos and the best man among the Phocians. He came from Panopeus, where he was king. Phorcys Phenops' son now straddled across Hippothous, but Aeus stabbed him right in the belly. The blade pierced the corselet plate and his bowels gushed out. He fell in the dust, clutching at the earth. Then Hector and his front men fell back, and the Achaeans, with shouts of triumph, dragged away the bodies of Phorcys and Hippothous and stripped off their armor. And now the Trojans would have lost heart. They would have been driven behind the walls of their city, and the Achaeans would have prevailed by their own strength and courage, even against the decree of Zeus. But Apollo made Aeneas take part. He assumed the shape of the herald Periphas Epitiades, a faithful old servant of the family, and said, "Aeneas, I wonder how you defend Ilios if a god were against you. Why, I have seen other men who trusted in their numbers and the strength of their manhood and kept their realm even against Zeus. But in our case, Zeus wishes victory for us rather than for the Danaans, yet you all run away forever and will not fight." Aeneas knew Apollo Shudafar at a glance and called out to Hector. "Hector, and your other captains, Trojans, and allies, this is really a disgrace if we are to be driven into the city like beaten cowards. But one of the gods has just come and told me that Zeus, the god of battles, is still on our side. Then let us have at the enemy. Don't suffer them tamely to rescue the body of Patroclus dead." Then he dashed through the front ranks and stood before them. The others wheeled about and faced the Achaeans. Aeneas struck down a man, Leocritus Arispas' son, the trusty comrade of Lycomedes. Then Lycomedes came up to the body and cast his spear. The blade struck Apisaon Hippasiades in the liver, and he collapsed. This man came from Paeonia, and he was their best man after Asteropaeus. Then Asteropaeus rushed forward at once to avenge his friend, but he could do nothing. The shields all stood like a fence about Patroclus, and the spears stuck out. Aeus was everywhere, keeping the men in hand. He would not let anyone move back or go out in front, but made them stand close round the body and lunge when they could. Such were the tactics of that prodigious man. The ground was red with blood, men were falling one after another among the assailants, and the Danaans too, for they did not fight without bloodshed, although they lost fewer men because they were careful to keep together and defend one another. As they fought in this fiery conflict, you could not suppose there was either sun or moon in the sky, for a thick cloud covered all the place where the fighting men stood about the body of Patroclus. But the rest of the two armies fought at their ease in the open air. The sharp, clear sunlight spread everywhere, and not a cloud was to be seen on earth or mountains. All these fought with pauses for rest, avoiding the shots which came from either side with plenty of room between. But the group in the middle had a hard struggle against both cloud and battle, and even the best of them were worn out with their efforts. But two men, Thrasymedes and Antilochus, had not yet heard that Patroclus was dead. They thought he was up at the front and still fighting. They were in a place apart where Nestor had sent them, watching the carnage and rout of their people. All day long there were hard times for those who were fighting round the body of Patroclus. Their desperate struggle covered them with sweat, knees and legs and feet, hands and eyes. They tugged and pulled at the dead body, like a party of men who have to stretch an ox hide soaking with grease and pull away standing in a ring till the natural moisture runs out and grease runs in. The hide is well stretched with all those men pulling. So they pulled that body against one another in the narrow space, the Trojans toward Troy and the Achaeans toward the ships. That was a savage maul. Neither Ares nor Athena would have thought it something too small to glut their anger. See what a bitter struggle of men and horses Zeus kept on the stretch about Patroclus. But Achilles did not know yet, as it seems, that Patroclus was dead, for the battle was far away from the ships under the walls of Troy. Achilles never expected that he was killed. He thought that if he got as far as the gates, he would return alive, for he never expected at all that Patroclus would take the city without him, nor with him indeed. So much he had often been told by his mother when she spoke privately of the will of Zeus. Certainly his mother told him nothing of all the misfortune which had now come about, and how the dearest of all his companions had been killed. So they went on without ceasing to grapple with one another in deadly strife over the body, and you might have heard the Achaeans saying, "Ah, my good friends, there's no doubt we could not retreat with honor and let the Trojans drag away this man in triumph. May the black earth swallow us first. That would be better." And the Trojans would say, "Ah, my friends, not a man must give way, not if we are all doomed to die together over this body." So they encouraged one another, and so they fought, while the iron din resounded through the unvintaged air to the brazen sky. But behind the battle, the horses of Achilles had been weeping ever since they heard that their driver was low in the dust, struck down by Hector's blood-stained spear. What could Automedon do? Often he touched them with a quick lash, often he cursed, and often he coaxed. But go they would not, neither back to the sea nor forward to battle. They stood with the car steady behind them, moving no more than a stone pillar on a tomb. They drooped their heads till they touched the ground. Hot tears ran from their eyes and fell, as they mourned the driver whom they had loved and lost. Their thick manes hung from the yoke pad over both sides of the yoke. Cronion was grieved as he saw their mourning, and shaking his head, he said to himself, "Ah, poor things! Why did we give you to a mortal man like Peleus, when you are immortal and never grow old? To share the sorrows of miserable mankind. For I think there is no more unhappy thing than man, of all creatures that breathe and move on the earth. Nevertheless, you and your splendid chariot shall never be driven by Hector Priamides. That I will not suffer. Is it not enough that he has the arms and utters vainglorious boasts? You shall have strength from me in your knees and your spirit. You shall bring Automedon to the ships and save him from the battle, for I will still give them victory, and they shall slay until they reach the ships. Then the sun shall go down, and sacred night shall come." Then he breathed courage into the horses. They shook the dust from their manes and brought their car swiftly to the battlefield. Automedon swooped as a vulture on the geese, fighting for all his sorrow. Lightly he charged into the thick of the throng. Lightly he left pursuing Trojans behind. But he killed no creature whom he pursued, for alone in that sacred chariot he could not both hold the swift horses and attack with a spear. At last a friend saw him, Alcimedon, son of Laerces, Haemon's son. He stopped behind the car and called out, "Automedon, has some god robbed you of your good sense and put this useless notion into your head? There you go, out in front, fighting the Trojans alone. But your comrade is dead. Hector himself has the armor of Iasides on his back, and mighty proud he is." Automedon answered, "Alcimedon, you're the man for me. There's no one else in the whole army who can manage these fiery horses. Only Patroclus, that heaven-born genius, while he was alive. But now he is dead and gone. Come on, take whip and reins. I'll get out and fight." He leapt out as he spoke. Alcimedon got into the welcome car and took over whip and reins. This Hector saw and called out, "Aeneas, my standby, I have just seen those two horses of Achilles suddenly appear in the battle, and drivers who are no good. I could take them, I hope, if you'll help. I don't think they would dare to stand up to you and me." Aeneas was ready, and they advanced together under their trusty shields, good oxhide with a thick facing of metal. Chromios and Aretos went with them. They felt sure they would kill the men and drive off those splendid horses. Poor fools, not without bloodshed, were they to part company with Automedon. But Automedon commended himself to Father Zeus, and full of confidence, he turned to his faithful friend. "Alcimedon," he said, "don't keep the horses too far from me. Let me feel their breath on my back. I believe Hector will stick at nothing until he has killed us both and got hold of these horses and routed our people, unless he is killed himself." Then he called the Aeas pair and Menelaus. "Aeas, you two and Menelaus, leave the body to the best men you have and let them see to the defense. But here are we two alive. Help us and save us. Hector and Aeneas are on us with all their weight, and they are the most dangerous of the Trojans. Ah, well, all is on the knee of the gods. I will have a shot myself, and the Lord of Heaven shall decide." He cast his spear and hit the shield of Aretos. The blade went through the shield and through the belt and pierced his belly. Aretos gave a leap forward and fell on his back, as an ox leaps forward and falls, when a strong man strikes with a sharp axe behind the horns and cuts the sinew. The sharp spear turned in his bowels, and he was still. Hector made a cast at Automedon, but Automedon was watching his eye and stooped forward. The spear flew over him and stuck in the ground behind, quivered, and was still. Then they would have fallen to with swords, but Aeas and the runner came to their comrade's call and parted the fighters. Their coming alarmed Hector and Aeneas and Chromios, who retired, leaving Aretos dead on the spot. Automedon quickly stripped off the armor and said triumphantly, "There now, I have eased my sorrow a little for my friend's death, although the man I killed is worth less." He took up the blood-stained spoils and put them in the car, then got in himself, with blood all over feet and arms, like a lion that has gorged a bull. The strife round Patroclus now became more bitter and desperate than ever. Zeus had sent down Athena to encourage the Danaans. He had changed his mind, no doubt. She wrapped herself in a lurid cloud, like the cloud about a rainbow which Zeus stretches across the sky to be a portent of war, or the chilly storm which drives men from their work upon the earth and distresses their flocks. Then she dashed among the Achaeans and pressed them on to the fight, one and all. She began with Menelaus, who happened to be near, and said in the shape and voice of Phoenix, "You, Menelaus, will certainly have shame and disgrace if the great friend of Achilles is worried by dogs under the walls of Troy. Stand firm, be brave, and keep the men at it." Menelaus said, "Oh, Daddy Phoenix, dear old ancient, let Athena give me strength and keep the shots away, and I would gladly stand firm and defend Patroclus, for his death has touched my heart indeed. But Hector is furious as blazing fire. He kills and kills without ceasing, and Zeus gives him the victory." Athena Brighteyes was pleased that Menelaus had prayed to her first of all. She strengthened his back and knees and put in his inmost heart the courage of a fly. "Beat him off from your skin as often as you like. He goes on biting, and human blood is his dainty dish." So Menelaus was filled with the irrepressible audacity of a fly. He stood over the body and cast his spear. There was a man, Podes, among the Trojans, Eetion's son, a rich man and a brave man. Hector thought more of him than any man of the nation, for he was his comrade and boon companion. The spear struck this man on the belt as he started to escape. It pierced him and brought him down. Then Menelaus pulled the body among his people. Now Apollo did his part for Hector. He took the shape of Phoenops Acides from Abydos, who was dearest of his guest friends. "Hector," he said, "what Achaean will ever fear you again, now you have run away from Menelaus, who used to be a flabby spearman? Now he has killed your true friend and good soldier Podes, and picked him up by himself, and dragged him from under your noses, and got away with him." This made Hector furious, and he pressed forward. At the same moment, Cronides turned the battle. Thick clouds covered Mount Ida. Lightning flashed and thunder rolled. The mountain quaked. Zeus took up his tasseled Aegis cape, shining bright, and shook it at the Achaeans. They turned in panic flight, and the Trojans began to prevail. Boeotian Peneleus began the retreat, moving slowly backward. He had a shoulder grazed and cut to the bone by Polydamas, who was close upon him. Next, Hector struck Leotos, Electrion's son, on the wrist and disabled him. Leotos made haste to escape, looking about him watchfully, for he knew he could not handle the spear now. Hector pursued, but Idomeneus hit him on the corselet over the breast. The spear broke at the socket, and the Trojans raised a shout. Idomeneus was now disarmed, and he would have been a dead man, for he had come on foot from the ships. But help was at hand, for Cyrenus of Lyctos in Crete had brought his master Meriones into the battle, and he kept the horses near while his master was fighting on foot as usual. Idomeneus got into this car, and as he stood there, Hector cast at him. He just missed him, but hit Cyrenus under the ear, cutting through the tongue and spilling his teeth. Cyrenus tumbled out, dropping the reins, but Meriones stooped and picked them up from the ground, saying, "Whip him up and away to the ships! You see yourself that we are losing now!" So Idomeneus whipped them up and got away, and Cyrenus saved Idomeneus, but not his own life. Aias and Menelaus also saw that the victory was passing from them, and Aias said, "Damn it! Any fool can see that Father Zeus is helping the other side. All their shots hit, whether a good man throws or a bad man. Zeus makes them all go straight, and all ours miss and stick in the ground. Well, we must look after ourselves. What is the best thing to do? We want to bring off this body and get back to our friends, too. They will be glad to see us. I think they are sorry enough if they look in this direction. They cannot expect us to keep off Hector the Invincible. He'll soon be upon our ships. I wish someone would go at once and tell Achilles. I don't believe he has even heard the bad news that his dear friend is dead. But I cannot see such a man anywhere. Men and horses are all swallowed up in this mist. O Father Zeus, save the Achaeans out of this mist! Make the sky clear, grant us to see with our eyes. Kill us in the light, since it is thy pleasure to kill us." The father pitied him as he prayed with tears in his eyes. In a moment, he scattered the mist and the dust. The sun shone above. All the scene of battle was disclosed. Then Aias said, "Look about now, my lord Menelaus. If you can see Antilochus alive still, and send him to tell Achilles that his dearest friend is dead." So Menelaus moved away, as a lion retreats from a farmyard, tired of fighting off dogs and men. He leapt in greedy for meat, but got none. For they have been awake all night to save their fat cattle from his jaws, and he is met with showers of lances thrown by strong hands and burning brands which terrify him, so when the dawn comes, he must depart disappointed. No less unwilling was Menelaus to leave Patroclus a prey to the Trojans, as he feared he would be, now all the army was en route. Before he went, he said earnestly, "Be careful, you two, and Meriones. You are in charge here, and you must not forget the gentle Patroclus, poor fellow. He was kind and pleasant to all in his life, but now death and fate has found him." Then he moved away, glancing watchfully all around, like the eagle which is said to have keenest sight of all birds that fly in the heavens. High in the air, he spies the quick-footed hare lying under a thick bush, stoops in a flash, and kills him. So Menelaus cast sharp glances around among the throng of men to see if he could spy the son of Nestor alive. Suddenly he saw them away to the left, rallying the men as well as he could, and he called out as soon as he was near enough, "Antilochus, this way, my dear man. I have bad news for you, I'm sorry to say. I think you can already see for yourself that God is rolling up trouble for us, and the Trojans have the best of it. But we have had a terrible loss. Patroclus is dead. Now then, run as quick as you can and tell Achilles. He may be able to save the body, and that is all. His armor is gone. Hector has it. Antilochus was shocked to hear the news. He was struck dumb. His eyes filled with tears, and his voice was choked. But he did what he was told, gave his arms to Laodocus, who was following him with the horses, and ran off at full speed. This left the Pylians without a leader. They were hard-pressed and looked for another, but Menelaus did not care to stay there and take the place of their leader. He put Thrasymedes in charge and ran back to defend the body of Patroclus. As soon as he reached Aeus, he said, "I have just sent your man at full speed to tell Achilles, but I don't believe he will come just now. He may be furious against Hector, but he could not fight naked and bare. We must do what we can for ourselves and see if we can save the body and our own lives, too." Aeus said, "Quite right, Menelaus. Be quick. You and Meriones put your arms under the body and lift it. You carry it away, and we too will protect your rear against Hector and all the rest. We have one name and one heart, and we are well used to stand side by side and face the foe." So they hoisted the body with a great effort. The Trojans raised a yell when they saw them lifting the body, and rushed at them like dogs that run before their masters upon a wounded boar. They run furiously until he turns on them in defiance. Then they scurry back all over the place. So the Trojans would come on in a body, stabbing at them with spears and swords, but whenever the doughty pair turned on them and stood, their color changed, and not one would dare to advance and show fight. In this way they carried the body to the ships, fighting as they went, while the battle spread around them like wildfire, which suddenly rises and spreads over a city, blown before the wind until the houses fall in ruins amid the blaze. So as they moved on, the ceaseless din of horses and fighting men rose all about them, and the two did their task like mules, putting forth all their dogged strength to drag a bulk or a ship's mast down a rocky path, worn out with sweat and weariness. Behind them, the two namesakes held off the battle. As a woody ridge right across the plains holds a flood, holds the torrents of mighty rivers, and drives off the waters over the plain for all their impetuous force. But the Trojans pressed them hard, and especially two, glorious Hector and Aeneas Anchisiades. The Achaeans fled before them with death shrieks and forgot how to fight, as daws or starlings fly in a cloud with death shrieks when they see a falcon who is certain death for a small bird. Many a fine spear and shield was thrown away and left around and about the moat in the Danaan rout, for there was never a moment's peace.